Hi, folks. I'm Jillian Fenner, and welcome to Strong Tower Radio feature program with my co-host,
Tom Majeure.
And in the studio, we have two guests, and we're going to be talking about housing today and all types of housing. We have with us Caitlin Stark, who is the president of the Cadillac Area Chamber of Commerce. We're glad you're here today.
And thank you for having me.
And also in the studio is someone that we hear on the radio, and he is involved with Strong Tower Radio. He happens to be the chairman of the board of Strong Tower Radio, but it is Pastor Bob Benson.
That's good to be here always.
And he is the pastor of three churches in our greater Cadillac area, which happens to be 13th Street Church that I go to. So he's my pastor. I better behave. And also the pastor of Manton and Meeseek Seventh-day Adventist churches. And Pastor, I have a question for you. How do you know Caitlin?
Man, we bump paths quite a bit between the health coalition that we have for Wexford, Meeseek County, and she does Rise Ups, which is a Chamber of Commerce event that businesses come to, and everybody who wants to know what's going on in Cadillac is there. And so she's a ball of fire, and she really caught my attention this last couple times because she started throwing out statistics about homelessness, about how our kids are doing in their test scores, and housing crunches and stuff like that. And it's like, wow, I can see above the water for when we talk about the tip of the iceberg, but down underneath, there's a whole nother pile of statistics that shows another picture that's not visible to this beautiful, wonderful, you know, like a photo shot Rockwell. This is a beautiful Cadillac, but there's another side of a struggle that's underneath. And that's why I said, we got to get this girl in the studio and we got to interview that and let her know. It's not just Cadillac. There's a lot of other small cities and towns that are facing similar stuff. So she's speaking to the issue at large. So I'm so glad you came, Caitlin. Thank you so much.
Well, and by trade, I am a realtor, and there is housing problems in Michigan and all over the country. And Tom, before we get started, I have a question for you. Now, you bought a house here in the greater Cadillac area in 2016?
Correct.
And did you look for very much housing at that time?
At that time, it was tight. You were my realtor, and you said it's been tight, and it has been for years. So in the last 5 years, the last 6 years, nothing has changed, and probably
it's gotten
worse.
Yes, it's gotten.
As Caitlin shared with us earlier, it's one of the greatest migrations since the migration of going out west. But we need to have word of prayer.
Yes, Tom, why don't you do that?
Our great Heavenly Father, we're talking about important issues. Lord, you came to this world and you were homeless, but you were homeless because you were serving us and serving others. But you were cognizant and you had great compassion for the physical needs of health, healing people, but their housing and other issues. And dear Lord, help us to be your hands and feet, first of all, by opening our eyes to be becoming aware, to be informed, and then to act appropriately as you call us as your people. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. So, Caitlin, first, let's define homelessness, because most of us have this, you know, thinking in our head. And you, Tom, you brought up about rural America. Homelessness, in all facets, you're going to explain maybe there's different degrees, but it's not just the big cities, because we think about the big cities, New York City, you know, out in California, and this homelessness.
What about people sleeping in their cars?
Yes, that's right.
And that's just the tip of the iceberg. Yep. They may even be in a house, but you may not know that there's a new term that we learned today, unhomed.
Unhomed. It is in some way, shape, or form just going to provide a different picture. Larger communities, you will see it more. They had more resources or services at one point, or still do, so they can. You can still be a resident, live, and still have services provide to you. This is why we don't see it as often in a rural community, because there are less available services if you are going to be homeless. But in all reality, during this massive migration, with this housing shortage, people, they don't have homes. But it doesn't necessarily mean that they're out on the streets. We've seen such an increase in co-inhabiting migration, and people are living with their families and friends now. Less health care services are being provided. There's less child care being provided. People are getting very creative about what that's calling, and using the word unhomed kind of shows this whole premise of this huge pandemic that we truly are in, and not being able to have a safe, secure, permanent address for families and kids, but also the space where they have their own sense of identity and safety.
An unhomed person might be a person who's showing up at work.
Absolutely. And they might have access to a shower. They might have access to food. Not everyone does. But it's somebody who doesn't have an address that is solely of their own. So we've seen a high increase, and we know this is an issue, not only because people are still moving here, and we're seeing those population increases, even though we aren't having the housing shortage, but we're seeing the increase in our storage units. The one I keep repeating because it's phenomenal to me, he just built this summer, and it's a 15% increase in full home items being stored there. There's 15% more household homelessness. Yes. People had full homes worth of things. They moved up here and they don't have a place to live, or they're co-inhabiting. They didn't want to get rid of everything they owned yet. So we're seeing this evidence protruding in other ways. We're seeing it with how people are communicating at work, how the kids are communicating in school. It's a lot when you don't have a stable place of your own, and we're seeing it in a lot of ways.
I'm trying to think of a way to say this in an appropriate way, but if you were to follow some of these people home, you'd be surprised where home is.
Their daughter's house, their aunt, uncle's house, their fourth or fifth friend in the last month and a half. I mean, there's a diversity of situations we're seeing and experiencing, and we're noticing that with our service organizations and nonprofits in the area.
I know somebody that belongs to one of our churches, and they really are homeless because they do not have their own home, their own address. They live with family, and sometimes they're with this family, sometimes they're with that family, and their car is full of a lot of their own stuff, and they work. They're considered, and that person even says, homeless sometimes, you know?
And, well, yeah. You know, Jillian, honestly, I was visiting with somebody that went to one of my churches, and their daughter actually lives in a shed, an uninsulated shed, has a power generator outside that in another shed, an electrical cord, and a space heater, while the rest of the family's inside the house. There's not enough room, and that's where she's going to stay this winter?
Yeah.
Wow.
And that is homelessness also. I mean, we're saying maybe unhoused, unhomed, but it's really homelessness if you do not have your own home where, like you're saying, a permanent address where you get mail. And I like this person that I know, I'm not sure where they get their mail, but one of the relatives, that's where their mail goes. So they do have an address, but it's not their own address.
And an own sense of place. There's a lot of security and confidence building that comes when you know you have a space that you've created. It is built for you. It works under your own habits. When you're moving around that much, you don't have that stability. And it's underrated how much the stability provides to how you present yourself out in the world.
Or even people walking through your space.
Yes.
That's not your own. You can imagine sleeping on a couch and somebody walks through the room. That's not your space.
Part of the problem I know here in the greater Cadillac area, because I've been in real estate and my husband, you know, we've built houses in some divisions and we've owned rentals. There is a big time shortage of rentals, and it's not just here. I know people from other places that, you know, talk about rentals. It's affordable housing, affordable rentals. And I know years back when I was very active in real estate and we were building homes, that there was a business looking, talked to the Chamber of Commerce about coming to Cadillac. There wasn't housing. So that business decided not to bring their business to Cadillac because how are they going to house employees? And that's still a problem, isn't it?
Oh, it's huge. And Cadillac's, us specifically, are a hub for several of our industries. So we've got people that we're attracting from all over the country for education, for healthcare, for media, and we don't have the space for them. One of the benefits of being in a rural community is we have that affordability. 53% of our housing stock is rental. In some way, shape, or form, it takes away from new purchases of new homes, but it's also super telling of the type of workforce that we also have here, that we have on the ground people working for our businesses. So we use it both ways to indicate, yes, we want to be able to provide for your new business coming in, but at the same time, know that you'll have to be part of these housing coalition conversations, because we do at all levels, from rental to our tiny homes to our mansions. We need all levels in our rural communities.
Well, and that's where there's the shortage of housing for a builder to build. I mean, that's what we did. And right now, you know, it's so expensive to buy lumber and everything. And so how do you make affordable housing And when I say affordable, not just for lower income, but even people, the professionals. I mean, they're only going to spend so much money.
One of the immediate things we were talking about earlier that people are jumping on board for is looking at the zoning, the regulations, because the labor and material we have lost control over, and those are continuing to increase. And without a pro forma that makes it look like I can build this and make it profitable to sell or profitable to provide a home for somebody, the regulations and the stipulations in order to build that quote unquote safe home is now so high. And it's not necessarily that we don't want people to be in safe homes anymore, but having sprinkler systems and duplexes that's difficult. That's a high expense. Being able to put in elevators, those can be $1 million costs, but to make sure that your home is ADA compliant. And we want these types of things. We want our families to be in safe, secure spaces, but now nobody has access to housing. And when we are having such a high migration, we are at the highest birthing rates than we've been in a very extensive period of time. This is going to be an issue that's not going away tomorrow, but we will need dramatic increases in moving forward. Your millennials that waited so long to have kids and were in those co-inhabiting places and comfortable with it for an extended period of time, those community housing situations, are needing housing. They're producing the kids now. We were able to waver off there for a moment, millennials taking so much time, but now we don't have healthcare facilities. We don't have for our older generations to move out of. They're staying, our millennials are growing up, and we didn't have that much to start with. And if we are going to have this increase in population again, here in the next 15, 20 years, you'll have this influx that we don't have the provided for.
Well, that's why you brought up about zoning. It's very important because it used to be, you know, you have to have so big of a lot and then, you know, minimum square footage. And you mentioned tiny homes. Well, that's a new thing now. And a tiny home is a lot less square footage than maybe the average home. And so the zoning, you know, we need to talk about that. And that is at the government level.
Yes. And that goes from your townships, your villages, all the way up through the state level. And in a lot of ways, the state has the large regional influences. So I absolutely, in talking about what makes things more affordable to build and to allow for us to have a larger increase of stock. Like you said, tiny homes are a huge benefit to producing not only a diversity, every family needs different situations, and tiny homes are so transversal and really easy for any type of moment, and they can be quick housing and provide a lot in a short period of space.
In a tiny home, it can be 600 square feet and less. I mean, there's been, you know, 100, 200 square feet that's considered a tiny home.
There's a lot of creative designs out there. Listeners, you're listening to Strong Tower Radio Feature on Strong Tower Radio Network with your host, Jelaine Fenner, Tom Majeur, and we have the guests, Pastor Bob Benson and Caitlin Stark of the Cadillac Chamber of Commerce. Caitlin, you're also a member of the Northern Michigan Housing Coalition. Tell us a little bit about what that area entails and what is trying to be done by a coalition of people improving or expanding housing in northern rural Michigan.
This coalition, it's Housing North, and Housing North hosts the Housing Innovation Council, and it's all of northern western Michigan. All of rural communities in some way, shape, or form are being affected by the fact that we need housing at all levels. And what are we doing on a regulatory zoning level, as well as what we're providing for services, for abatements, for incentives? What does that look like on a legislative level? But Housing North also does a phenomenal job of educating and providing new language that we can use when we talk about housing. Because housing has had a diversity of stereotypes over an extended period of time. It's hard to have those conversations about developing when there is so much stigma attached to when we're talking about, like we started with, homelessness or unhomed, and what that means for affordable housing. We now like to call obtainable or professional housing. Now, Housing North does a really good job of providing that language and providing those summits and experiences to kind of give exposure to not only what the problem is, but why the need is so great. And the economic developing organizations, locally Alliance for Economic Success here, is a great partner with Housing North to create not only the programs and the exposure pieces that we need, but then when us chambers can get involved, we can add the advocacy piece to work on specific bills to make sure the priorities they think are going to be the most immediate can go through quickly.
Are there other organizations like Housing North around the state?
Yes. Housing Next in Grand Rapids is another well-partnered organization that does similar things, but they're more Grand Rapids-centric. Rural communities, you see different things than you're going to see in an urban community, such as we have to pay that much more to have water and electricity. You have to pay that. But when we talk about gas lines coming in, that's a regional experience that is so critical and expected of our communities. But those are things we have to overcome first. Broadband. And we have people that are looking at Michigan specifically and saying, I don't enjoy being in 130 degree heat indexes and without water on the west side of the country anymore. If I go to Michigan, I don't have broadband or electricity now with the blackouts. So I'll go to rural Michigan. I'll be in the forest. I'll be surrounded by water. And I'm going to be happy with the same barriers that I'm having back home. And we're starting to see this increase. We're starting to read the articles. We're seeing the writing on the wall. We need to be prepared for it because we enjoy, a lot of people go up to the rural communities to kind of spread out. But in order to have the services that we used to, we have to make those types of investments because they're starting to take away already. Our agriculture is so computer-oriented and broadband-oriented. We didn't even notice how much deficit we had until everyone worked from home and realized we didn't have that much to take to begin with to work from home because our farming communities needed it and were utilizing so much of what we had. So there's a need for that investment on a regional scale, and we work really closely with those other regional partners across the state. When you're riding your bike or driving your car, you don't know that you cross county lines. Or when you're on a trail, that you're in a new district or coalition. So when we work with those other collaborative partners across the state, it allows us to do things together, but make sure a rural voice is still heard at the table.
You know, you brought up about broadband. We found that especially in the rural communities with school, when the kids had to work from home, they don't have internet. I know this is something that the state's working on, which will definitely help in with the housing, because I'm being a realtor and having people looking, you know, for houses, well, what kind of internet is available at that location, especially if it's out in the country? People that live in the cities don't understand the difference there is being out in the country.
I had someone ask what they came up for our wedding this summer and asked if they had to use Port-a-Johns when they were at our house. I said, we're not that rural. We're rustic. We have personality, but we have infrastructure. And we did have a sense of infrastructure even that was very livable before the pandemic. But now that stuff is being used on a more regular basis. And with both work and students being as hybrid and as transitional as they are right now and will continue to be, I mean, especially if we're talking about kids that are couch surfing or going from home to home to home, they need reliability. They don't have the capacity to not do their homework this week or next week because the house that they're staying at doesn't have broadband. They're still going to be scored the same as every other student. They're going to be expected to hit the same attendance records. They're still being expected to hit these same marks, but they don't have access to over whatever emotional and transitional brackets that they're going in.
What do you feel is something that needs to be done, has to be done?
There's so many chickens before the egg or egg before the chicken scenarios there. First and foremost, a human needs their basic needs to be met. They need water, food, and they need a home. And ultimately, when we get the home, we can focus on those other features. We can bring the broadband. We can bring the chips. The laptops can have hotspots. But unless a child or a family or a new person coming to the community or a new family coming to the community, they need to have a space that can be completely of their own, a space that can be transitional through all of that they're experiencing in this moment, and something they have a sense of control over, especially when the world feels like it's so out of control now. Without having that home or safe space, people feel overwhelmed. They feel disoriented. I think one of the emails said discombobulated. Add the Bob in there. Building a home is so mandatory for the safety, security, and emotional well-being that produces the work and production that our workforce and our students create now and this moment, next week, and the future of our communities.
And aren't some of the, at least here in the Cadillac area, some of the corporations and companies trying to figure out how they can contribute, what they can help to do so we have more housing?
Hotels, motels, the tiny homes are a very trendy way to get into the conversation. Missing middle allows us to explore more than just single homes to apartments. It allows us to explore the duplex, the triplex, community living situations where you get the room and a mini kitchen, but in all reality, the living space is open. These types of things allow people to get started, or at least be in whatever transitional moment they are in their life, has something that meets their needs. Housing being as expensive as it is, both rental to mortgage, you don't have that flexibility financially. And to not have that as an option increases the homelessness number, because if you can't afford it, you don't get to participate. You don't get to have a home. And that's without that flexibility and those transitional types of opportunities. That's where we're seeing a lot of split and divide. You can either afford it or you can't, and you're either participating or you're not.
So I said, you know, what's the most important thing? There is not one thing. It's multifaceted on what has to be done between zoning, which is government, to, you know, developers and to the corporations helping. This is a very, very important thing that needs to be addressed and taken care of. And it's not going to happen overnight.
Oh, no, not in any way, shape, or form. We've been trying for over a decade legislatively and community. How the community can participate is really connecting with your service organizations, your program organizations, meeting people that are working on these issues partway. Your local churches are a key element to meeting people at their needs. Your local YMCA, your school systems. What does the hospital need right now? Because the hospital and your churches are seeing people at their lowest. And what are they experiencing or witnessing? Communities participating in those moments with people gets them to the next step. Mm-hmm. And so we legislatively will work on a lot of the zoning or look on a lot of the incentives. We need to encourage the reduction of restrictions, and we want safe building codes, but we don't want to make it so expensive that we can't build and developers aren't attracted to building in our areas.
If people want to contact you or the chamber, whether it's somebody wanting to help, what can they do? Maybe it's somebody out there that needs help. Give us some contact information.
Please reach out to us for all levels of housing. We have strong partners in all of our local organizations, as well as what are those next steps on a regional level. The Cadillac Area Chamber of Commerce. Shoot us an email at info@cadillac.org.
And that's info@cadillac.org.
Or give us a call, and we would love to connect with you and learn how we can share those resources.
So what's the phone number?
Please reach us at the Cadillac Area Chamber of Commerce at 231-775-9776. That's 231-775-9776.
Whether they're needing help
or you want to be part of the solution.
Yes, that's right.
So you can reach out to the chamber here, but in your local community, reach out to your chamber or housing authorities.
Absolutely. We have a really strong alliance with the Northern Michigan Chamber Alliance and the Michigan Chamber of Commerce. We will get you solutions to what you're looking at and how you want to partner and engage.
Well, thank you, Caitlin, for coming in. And this has decades been a problem with housing in the Cadillac area, and it's only getting worse. So thank you for sharing with us, and we will pray that there will be more solutions in helping the housing shortage. Thank you, listeners.
Bye now.
Thank you.